Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car. Because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. Know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun. And hey, you know what else you don't see? You don't see me leaving for work in the morning, because I missed so much time with court and everything that I got fired.
Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is Amy Hackett-Jones, your show host for this afternoon. And today we are in the Being Brilliant radio show, How to Ignite Your Life and Shine. And this show is all about a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. So I'm inviting you, my listeners, to step into the very essence of who you are being and how you show up to life. My interviewees bring a combination of ancient wisdom teachings coupled with practical tools and essential life and leadership skills translated into actionable strategies so that you guys can learn how to really step into being the very best version of yourselves. My interviewees typically are high performers, thought leaders, game changers, soul activators, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, wayseers, as well as friends and family. Those who, in my eyes, live brilliantly and who travel magically through life, shining their light so others may do the same. Yes, that's you. So my name is Amy Hackett-Jones. I am a life and leadership coach. I focus on happiness and high performance. And inner peace is my core value. That's where I begin. So today on the show, we have a very dear friend of mine called Stephen Vasconcelos-Sharp. And Stephen is up to some big stuff in life right now. He recently is the founder and publisher of Salt Magazine, which you can go to www.wearesalt.org. He's going to tell us all about that. He's also the curator of the Compassionate Manifesto with Al Gore, Muhammad Yunus, Desmond Tutu, and many more, envisioning the best world for the future. And he's also creating something called the Global Future Forum. So we're going to ask him all sorts of questions about this, all these fantastic and forward-looking projects he's working on. So, Stephen, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Amy. You're kind.
Thank you very much. So just to give our listeners a little bit of an overview of your story, and who you are, where you've come from, and what, you know, why you're here right now. Could you just talk a little bit about your story?
Oh my goodness, it's not such an exciting story, really. I come from a traditional, mostly working class Scottish background, fairly uneventful. The most exciting part being that it wasn't entirely Scottish due to the fact that my mum brought a little spice and sunshine, coming herself from the Caribbean. She was in fact half Trinidadian and half Portuguese, Indian.
Oh, wow, that's some spice for you.
It was, yeah, shining a little light, shining a little bit of sunshine in Scotland here. But other than that, fairly bog standard background. Studied as a lawyer, and then moving on to work in nation branding, that gave me the opportunity to see and experience lots of cultures all over the world. World that I know that you know well.
So. Yes, well, we both work together in this nation branding industry. Perhaps you could tell me a little bit more, tell the audience rather, a little bit more about what you mean by nation branding.
So the image of countries, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Amy and I overlapped for a while in this weird and wonderful sector, where we've parachuted into incredible destinations, sometimes quite off the beaten track.
Yes.
In places that were, you know, maybe they were stands such as Kyrgyzstan or Kyrgyzstan or Tajikistan or, you know, weird and wonderful countries, beautiful places, countries that maybe you might not be so familiar with in Africa or in, you know, countries like Yemen, Congo, Mongolia.
I know, we've been all over.
We were really blessed. And so that was an experience that really opened, dare I say, both of our eyes. And was a real blessing because, you know, as we traveled, the more you experience, and we got to meet some really incredible people on our travels. The more you experience, the more countries you visited, you realize that fundamentally, humans and the human condition is the same the world over.
Absolutely. And who was it that most impressed you? Out of all the heads of state, all the ministers, all the international businessmen you met in these weird and wonderful countries, who was it that impressed you most?
Well, you're really putting me on the spot here. You know, that particular life feels like a very distant past life that I don't have that much affinity with, although, you know, it was an incredible blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, we did have the opportunity to meet a lot, you know, a great number of presidents and heads of state and ministers and CEOs and incredible, you know, people who, you know, had dedicated their lives to doing something in their eyes, which was big.
Yep.
And important, and, you know, in inverted commas. But these days, this particular kind of power influencer, if you like, or key decision maker,
mm-hmm.
doesn't really excite me in the way that it did back then.
Yeah.
It was an interesting experience to meet these people, but the people that truly inspire me and I look up to are the ones who are perhaps not at the apex of the power pyramid,
mm-hmm.
but more, you know, those who are in service to others.
Wonderful. So when you look at those who are in service to others now, in what sort of realm do you mean? What sort of picture are you looking at these days?
With our platform, We Are Salt.
This is the magazine, We Are Salt. WeAreSalt.org.
Thank you for the plug there.
Yep.
The purpose of this platform is, first of all, we recognize that we're at an incredibly exciting time in history. It's a time that, you know, there is no master plan. We've not been here before. It's a time when, you know, there are a converging number of problems which alone could spell the end to our civilization. But together, they could be terrifying if you fully consider the implications of them.
Mm-hmm.
The water that we drink is being poisoned by chemicals, the air that we breathe is polluted, the food that we eat is no longer as nutritious as it once was. It may even be being poisoned, and the remaining nutrients in that food may be threatened by the actions of chemical companies that don't really fully understand the implications of what they're playing at. The economic system and the socioeconomic system that we subscribe to, this current version of capitalism, no longer serves the majority. And if the current trends are anything to go by, are sucking wealth out of the system at a phenomenal rate. to enrich the top 1%, and you know, I have no doubt that that will end up leading to a situation where the top 0.001% mm-hmm. end up being enriched at the expense of everybody else. In short, things are no longer working, and you know, if you add to that the fact that the biodiversity of the planet is under threat, and we're now using 1.5 times the biocapacity of the planet in terms of the resources and the planet's ability to regenerate, we can no longer support the booming population that we have, set to reach 9 billion by 2050, I think, and a whole host of other issues, not to mention climate change and deforestation, etc. And, you know, we're in serious trouble. And yet, we're sleepwalking to disaster. But I actually feel like, you know, these converging crises are exactly what we're meant to, you know, what we're meant to be facing at this particular time. And mm-hmm. precisely because in every crisis, there is a golden opportunity, a diamond that presents us with the key of transformation. And I feel that we have all of the tools, all of the wisdom, and all of the knowledge in order to transcend all of these issues and embrace the next level of evolution for humankind.
Wow. That's a massive context for where we want to take, well, not just this, where we want to take this interview, but also looking, really feeding the, you know, the big picture of actually what the reality is on the planet right now. And I think a lot of us sort of bury our head in the sand and are not that aware necessarily the scope of really what's going on. But when you paint it like that, it could be seen as all doom and gloom. But then, as you say, all of this is happening at a time when, not by accident, sort of accidentally on purpose, there are more and more people growing in conscious awareness. There are more and more people becoming, should I say, compassionate, because we're going to get onto that word in a moment, in life, in business. Slowly people are beginning to wake up to the fact that we need to do more, we need to be more, rather than just the you know, it's all about me that has come before us. So I, for one, feel that it's like a groundswell that is happening that you've just described, that yes, there is all of this disaster and trauma and that sort of thing going on the global scale. But also when we come full circle, we look a little deeper, we peel back a few onion layers, actually what's happening from the grassroots up is that people are beginning to connect, collaborate, communicate, rather than this old model of sort of command and control. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely, couldn't agree more, Amy. What I feel is that we're entering, in terms of our economic system, which is one of the most obvious indicators of what's gone wrong. I feel like we are seeing the grassroots of the fourth stage of capitalism. So, you know, we began with agrarian capitalism thousands of years ago. That developed into mercantilism. That spawned the industrial revolution, which drove people into cities and allowed people to become a lot more organized. That in turn led to the information age that began in the 1970s. And which has delivered 24/7 instant connectivity for all of us, and we're all enjoying incredible, you know, amazing benefits from this particular phase of capitalism at present. But I feel like we are about to enter, or we may already have entered, the age of purpose, where precisely because of these converging issues that we are faced with, we realise that the same old no longer serves. And so the only way that we can transcend our issues is that old chestnut from Albert Einstein that what's it about?
We cannot create
a new
reality from the thinking we used before.
Absolutely.
Something like that, something along those lines.
Something along those lines, exactly. Thank you for saving my bacon there. we need, you know, in order to solve the issues that face us, the old thinking no longer serves. And so we need new thinking. And so if you take it to have a different perspective and you step outside of the various issues that we're facing, then it's clear that the only solution that can be created to meet all of these challenges involves a completely different shift in perspective and a new coming together. And if you look at the evolution of humanity from the year dot,
mm-hmm.
And the organization of social structures, you'll see that several millennia ago, when small groups were forming and nomadic peoples were coming together and then eventually settling and tilling the land, to the first settlements, then the first villages, the first towns, the first cities. Now we're at, you know, now we have mega cities, statehood, nation state, which we've already grown out of. And you know, the current system is due for an upgrade. It's due for an MOT.
I like that.
Because the nation state has now, it's been surpassed by the power and influence of corporations. And we all know that that kind of power exercised by entities that have no accountability, nobody to answer to across borders, is a very dangerous state of affairs to continue to encourage. And so, what I believe is that we are entering the age of purpose, where people and the organizations they participate in will organize themselves around clearly defined goals that are all about delivering positive impact for the masses. And that is what's going to shape the next stage of capitalism.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds certainly exciting to me. So how does Salt magazine, how does that fit into this vision you have?
Salt magazine, it's really a magazine, it's really a platform for these ideas that we've been talking about. There's a lot of crossover with the people that you speak to and the issues that you address on your show as well. It's essentially a platform for innovators, visionaries, game changers, positive change agents, and the ideas that they represent. Essentially capturing the zeitgeist of what I believe is happening just now. That we have this incredible opportunity around transformation. We have to grab it by both arms.
By both arms and jump both feet in. Okay, so what kind of articles and that sort of thing do you cover in Salt? Just to get give our listeners a bigger picture.
Well, we look at leadership. We look at game changers.
Great.
We have a big focus on what we call compassionate business thinking. It's really about companies and leaders who espouse the values of people, planet, and profit. So triple bottom line thinking.
People, planet, and profit.
This seems to be a new trend that corporates and leaders at the vanguard of these changes, who understand that they can no longer behave in scant regards for the environment or for society, are shaping their businesses so that they can sell the products that they've always been selling, but do so in a way that's respectful of their impact, their environmental impact and their social impact.
And so you're seeing them starting to tell a different story?
Absolutely. I see that there are a number of different leaders who are embracing this new trend. I think the politicians are probably the last to get it.
To come along.
But there are a number of different corporate leaders who are doing incredible things, and companies are pivoting. I think one of the great incentives for corporations, and this gives me great hope as well, is that the millennial population, so that's not me, but the people who were born after 1982, so 33 and below. Amy, you look like you're 21.
Sure. Of course.
So this is your group. So the millennial population, 33 and below, who are going to account for 75% of the workforce by the mid-2020s and beyond in the States and in the UK and I believe most of Western Europe. This millennial segment, millennial group, are a very interesting group of individuals who have different values from the people, from those of us that came before. And they're really shaping things. And so whereas baby boomers would have bought almost any old message that advertisers presented them with and continued to buy products quite happily, millennials challenge the messages that they're presented with. They don't consume media in the same way. So they don't consume traditional print. They don't even get their news from the same places. So this is the internet generation. And they are demanding to be engaged with on values.
Yeah.
And so what that means for big corporation is that unless they court the millennial generation with a more positive, uplifting, and authentic message, and they show that they're committed to making a positive impact, these guys aren't going to buy the product. But not only are they not going to buy the product, it appears that they don't even want to work for these companies.
Yes.
Less than 12% will now want to work for a multinational. And so of that 12%, apparently all need to be engaged on values. And so these companies, the more aware, already see the writing on the wall and they're reforming the habits. And so that's why I have optimism, because looking further down the line, it's the millennials who'll save us.
And what would you say their core values really are? What are they looking for?
So they've grown up in a completely different environment from the environment that I certainly grew up in. We didn't have computers until I went to university. And then, clumsily having to type out my essays with one finger and clunky internet that arrived somewhere, a few years short of my 30th birthday. So these guys, you see young people these days, very young children playing on iPads. These guys are completely computer literate. I mentioned that they get their news and information from different sources. So they don't subscribe to one particular set of views. They're a lot more open-minded,
mm-hmm.
and they challenge.
Yeah, they do.
They challenge. When I grew up, or when I was a young child, there were three television stations. Now, we all have access. Those people that watch television have access to thousands of television channels and lots of different news channels, from BBC to Al Jazeera. And if you're a completely insane person, then Fox News. these guys don't watch those channels.
No.
They go to YouTube. They'll get their news from Facebook and lots of different channels. And so they're questioners, but generally they want to see us do a much better job of stewarding our planet's limited resources.
Yeah. And this reminds me actually of a quote from the Native American tribes in North America, that it's, I don't remember the quote exactly, but it's about the earth is borrowed from our children. Like, we've borrowed it from our children, so the idea is that we have to hand it back in a better state, or hand it to them in a better state that we found it. And I think these millennials, as you're saying, are living by that, because they're questioning everything that's gone before them. And I love the fact that they're doing that. And as you're saying, in big corporates, when I speak to people about coaching in business, gone are the days when people had a career, one job, one career. Now you'd be lucky if you hold on to a millennial for 2 or 3 years, because it's all about the adventure, the experience, the knowledge and the wisdom on their journey.
Absolutely. This generation can't count on a job for life. They don't have that security.
No.
Nor do they want it.
No.
They want to feel inspired, and they want to feel stretched, and they want to feel like they're making a difference. And so, we're seeing all of these emerging trends, and we're not only seeing these, these trends emerge, but we're seeing people emerge differently, shaped by the those pressing issues of our time. And I think that this is an incredible time to be alive. It's a truly magical moment. And we should give gratitude for that. But we should also honour it, because being alive at this time comes with tremendous responsibilities. And we need to be conscious and aware of how our actions and behaviours are impacting others and the planet.
I completely agree. My next question would be, therefore, for you, how have you become more conscious, and do you have a daily gratitude practice, or even just something to share with our listeners for them to take away?
Oh my goodness, how have I become more conscious? Well, I feel like the tendency of this human condition is to become ever more conscious. Being alive is a conscious experience, and living daily is not quite snakes and ladders, but it's a game where you collect conscious brownie points.
And, I love that.
The whole point of the experience is to expand in consciousness, and perhaps, to do you a little bit for expanding the universe. So how have I become more conscious? I wasn't always aware. I was a suit for a long time and had a lot of fun. And then I had a spiritual epiphany around about the time of the crisis in 2008, 2009 when I lost a company and a lot of money. But in the process, while I lost a lot in terms of finances and financial security, I gained myself. And so it was a beautiful trade-off. And one that, you know, I'm actually very grateful for, because it seemed that I was maybe on the wrong path. And since then, I have done a huge amount of work on myself. I studied to be a shamanic practitioner, did a number of retreats and courses. I read a lot, I studied a lot, I studied with some great people. I learned a lot of techniques that I still apply. And today, my efforts center around meditating. I meditate twice a day, I make a tremendous effort to be incredibly watchful of my thoughts. I have a lot less thoughts these days than I ever did, but because of the amount of meditation that I do, and so it's rare for me to have a negative thought. But when I do have a negative thought or worry or concern, I don't resist it, which is what I would have done some years ago. I acknowledge it, and then I send it love, and that's what seems to work for me.
And so as you acknowledge it and you send it love, then what happens? Does it dissipate? What happens to that energy?
So before, when I had these, you know, a few years ago, last year even, when I would have more worries or concerns, not real ones, of course, just the imaginary sort of bogeyman type worries that everybody has.
But go on and on and on and on and on and on in your head.
A lot, you know, you realize that a lot of those same concerns or worries or thoughts are repetitive. Mm-hmm. They come from the same place, and they really hold you back. What happens when you send it love? When you stop attaching, focusing your attention on the thought, and just let it go and observe it, acknowledge it, let it go. Say, oh, that's interesting that I should be thinking that. Where did that come from? Shall I send the source of that thought, love. Let me love that part of me that felt it needed to generate that thought to catch my attention. Then, you know, at that level of consciousness, when you're not in resistance, you're not struggling against your thoughts, and how can it maintain a hold over you? And so having practiced that for a while, I can tell you that where I am now is mostly in the void, and it's an amazing place to be. Not always, I do have thoughts, but they tend to be a whole lot more positive, and they're less repetitive. And I generally, if they do start to become repetitive, I catch them. And then I do more work on myself, and I do more meditation, and get back to that place of heart. And so that's what has worked for me, and has allowed me to anchor myself within my heart, which is where I operate from now. And I firmly believe that the illness of modern society is that we have allowed ourselves to venerate the mind as if it's the the highest part of us, whereas in my view, the highest part of us is really the heart. And so operating from the heart, you feel through life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think life, you feel it. You know, life comes at you and you feel it, and then you respond accordingly, or you don't respond.
Rather than reacting.
Rather than reacting, mm-hmm. you feel it and you let it go. And from that place, life just becomes a whole lot more magical as you allow yourself to become present.
Wonderful. I remember my teacher, my shamanic teacher, once said to me, the longest journey in the world is from your head to your heart. It's only about a foot in length, but it's the longest journey in the world. And like you say, just to reiterate this, it is a practice. You know, if you try meditation once or twice and your mind is just going as mine did for quite some time, you've got to stick with it. It's like riding a bicycle. And once you start and you keep going, you keep the momentum going, it just becomes, like you say, a magical journey, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I really struggled with overthinking. I don't know how many thoughts we have a day, maybe 80,000?
Something like that, yeah.
80,000 thoughts. And when you imagine that 80% of those are repetitive, you know, you realize that you become beholden to your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
When you operate in your heart, it's a completely different experience. Life becomes magical. And you also realize that you're piloting life from this place. And you become much more creative. You're open to much more inspiration. The people, experiences and opportunities that are meant to show up for you in order to support your path, they manifest instantly. And so then it becomes a whole lot more fun. It's a beautiful process.
Wonderful. So I ask all of my all of my interviewees to tell me what their favorite song is, their favorite song that really inspires them and gets them pumped in the mornings, gets them going. So for you, what you said to me earlier is that it's Nina Simone's version of Here Comes the Sun. So just tell me a little bit about why this song inspires you so much.
Well, I like lots of music, but I tend to especially now that I am more conscious, I gravitate more towards the music that has conscious lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And Here Comes the Sun is definitely an uplifting, positive song with a very positive message. You know, how can you get more positive than saluting the sun? I feel that every sunrise is a reminder of our innate ability to recreate afresh every single moment. And life presents us with a constant ebb and flow, a doing and undoing, beginnings and endings and beginnings in lots of different guises. And sunrises and sunsets are perhaps the most obvious and most beautiful and magical examples of just how stunning this setup of life, this game of life is. And for me, that song encapsulates that and is an ode to that. And I just love it. I love Nina Simone.
Oh, doesn't she have just an incredible voice? I can't wait to play it in just a moment. So here we have Here Comes the Sun, Nina Simone's version of this song. You can download it on iTunes. So be sure to go there and listen to this this version again and again because it is such an uplifting song. And focus in on the sunset and the sunrise as new possibilities and new opportunities. So thank you, Stevie. Here we have Nina Simone, Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say.
Wow, what an incredibly uplifting song. Don't you just love that? Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I really, really appreciate that. And for you bringing that space, that song into the space and sharing it with my listeners. Really, really fantastic. And again, you can all find Nina Simone's version of Here Comes the Sun on iTunes. Thank you so much for sharing. That was a huge pleasure. Now, I know we're running out of time almost. So I want to focus next on one of your other projects, which is as curator of the Compassionate Manifesto. So can you tell me a little bit more about this?
So the Compassionate Manifesto is a project that was born out of SALT, which is clearly about celebrating game changers and the ideas that are shaping our current our new reality, rather. I felt that there are so many interesting individuals with such incredible ideas, all doing their bit to shift the dialogue forward and to make a positive impact. But there was, what we were lacking was a joined-up thinking, if you like, that could bring a lot of these incredible souls and their ideas together under one common roof, and in order to give people hope, and also to peg their aspirations against, to help them visualize what is possible. Essentially, the Compassionate Manifesto is just that. It's a tool to allow people wide and far to visualize what the new reality looks like, and to make it a bit more real. And so what we've done, my dear friend Kim Pullman, and the beautiful soul, and I, is we have invited 50 thought leaders from different walks of life with different expertises, many of them thought academics, several Nobel laureates, some of the world's leading environmentalists, oceanographers, leaders, and people like,
give us some examples.
Give me some names. Al Gore is contributing. Desmond Tutu.
Wonderful. I love Desmond Tutu.
Desmond Tutu also. Muhammad Yunus, the Nobel laureate who created Grameen Bank and pioneered in microfinance. Mo Ibrahim, who was Africa's wealthiest man, but who decided to give away a large part of his foundation to eradicating corruption in Africa, and paying presidents that don't want to let go of power to step down and retire. So we've got some incredible people sharing their vision of the best world our hearts know is possible. And the reason we call it the Compassionate Manifesto is because it's really a vision that's predicated on the golden rule. What would the world look like if we were all to come together and think about our impact on one another? And so it's predicated on the golden rule and compassion. The golden rule being the essence of virtually every world religion.
And why would you say compassion? Why that word? Why does it have so much weight for you?
Well, compassion for me is about coming together, and operating and or acting and behaving in a way that is led from the heart and factors or takes into account your impact on other people's hearts. But I mean, actually, it's more than that. It's acting in a way that is led by your heart and guided by how you touch other people's hearts. And so that's really what the project is about, and we're really lucky to have caught the imaginations of some incredible people that, you know, some of whom are my heroes, writing contributing their time and effort to help us and visualize solutions to some of the world's most pressing problems across a whole range of different subjects, from what to do with in order to replenish our forests, in order to clean up the oceans, create a more sustainable economy, create an economy that is zero waste, that to create new systems of education, new systems of healthcare that that serve everyone and that are affordable, and a completely new system of capitalism. And so I'm really excited about this project. And it's consumed me for some time now, and hopefully should be on bookshelves by the end of the year.
Yes, you're writing a book, aren't you?
Well, this is the book.
You can all look at or go to compassionatemanifesto.com, and the book will be coming out by the end of the year.
Hopefully by the end of the year, if not early next year. But we've already had an offer from the first publisher that's approached us, which is great. I believe that there could be a few others in there. We've got some great names, so I'm not worried about it being a success. But my focus is on making sure that this reaches as many people as possible, so that we can move away from this sort of dumbed down paralysis that that most people are in, towards optimism and hope for the future. Because although we have certainly have our fair share of issues to deal with, there's a great deal of optimism. There's definitely a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
There is, and where there's optimism and hope, there's a coming together of people, and in that coming together and in that building of relationship, there are also opportunities and possibilities.
Absolutely. It's really exciting. Yeah. Very excited to see what this beautiful new world we're creating is going to look like.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. So we have one more thing to talk about, which is your Global Future Forum. Tell me a little bit about that. These are three big, mega, amazing, awesome projects you've got going.
Oh, bless you.
Tell me a little bit more about this.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to rat on like a windbag here. you're being very kind. But the Global Future Forum is the next level of the Compassionate Manifesto.
Okay.
What I believe is that. If I can use the metaphor of the hungry caterpillar that's engorged itself and cocoons itself on a leaf or hanging from a branch or whatever for a time, when its insides basically become some sort of crazy cosmic stew of possibility. That feeds the potential of the butterfly that emerges at the end of the process. Now, the middle of the process is quite an interesting period.
Yep.
While the old caterpillar that has engorged itself starts to decompose and become this incredible cosmic stew. There are a number of cells that are called imaginal cells that hold the vision for the reality of the butterfly. And what happens before the imaginal cells eventually consolidate and pull together is the dying part of the caterpillar kind of regroups and realizes that it's under threat and tries to wipe out the imaginal cells that it perceives as an attack on the status quo. And so it's at that time that the imaginal selves themselves seize the opportunity to pull together and push through the vision of the butterfly. And that always happens. That's an inevitable process. And so I feel that the metaphor is very similar. We can borrow that for what's happening just now. There's a huge amount of possibility, and we all know that the change is on the cards. And indeed, there are some amazing people with amazing ideas that are working tirelessly as imaginal selves to push through their different visions. What I'm hoping to do with the Compassionate Manifesto and the Global Future Forum is to create a platform for those imaginal selves to come together and push through the butterfly.
I love that analogy. Thank you so much. And you can even apply that on a one-on-one level as well, as each of us individually evolve and come together. Mm. But I love the way you did that for the platform. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, people, you can all go to www.wearesalt.org to go and read all sorts of incredible interviews and articles from these thought leaders, game changers, way seers. and compassionatemanifesto.com. Please go there, check it out. Let us know what you think, get involved. So is there anything else you would like to add, Stephen?
The only thing I think that I need to add is just how much gratitude I have for the opportunity to sit down with you this afternoon and to compliment you on an amazing show. What great work you're doing.
Thank
Beautiful.
You very much.
Want to honour that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a huge pleasure reconnecting with you and just watching your evolution. And I know you've been watching mine too, so it's mutual. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you so much. Well, I will see you all in 2 weeks' time for yet another incredible interview. You will be able to catch the replay in a day or so. So stay tuned and stay positive. And remember, people, planet, and profit. It's the new triple bottom line. I love that. We're in the age of purpose. So start figuring out what your purpose is and bring it to fruition, because this is what the world needs right now. So thank you very much. It's been a huge pleasure. And I will see you soon. Bye.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Radio. The new Carl's Jr. Midnight Moonshine Burger. It's not for everyone. It's not for you if you once tried moonshine, then call the cops on yourself. And if your idea of bootlegging is illegally taping your favorite jam band, it's not for you. But if you like the sweet burn of moonshine glaze on Black Angus beef, it's for you. The Midnight Moonshine Burger. Only at Carl's Jr.
For a limited time, participating restaurants. Cook product contains trace amounts of alcohol. Midnight Moon is a registered trademark of Piedmont Distillers Incorporated, Madison, North Carolina.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car. Because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. You know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun. And hey, you know what else you don't see? You don't see me leaving for work in the morning, because I missed so much time with court and everything that I got fired.
Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
That isn't just the sound of the all-new 2016 Mercedes-Benz GLC being put through its paces. It's the sound of innovation. The innovation behind one of the most advanced SUVs on the road today. With multiple driving modes, a suite of intelligent drive systems, and a technology-filled cabin that sets new standards in modern luxury. This is what innovation sounds like. Now, discover what it feels like in a 2016 Mercedes-Benz GLC.
Some equipment described as optional.